We are joined on the line by Dr. Nicole Earhart. She is Colorado State University's director of the Columbine Health Systems Center for Healthy Aging. She's the first woman at Colorado State University to receive a university endowed chair, is a veterinarian, board certified surgical oncologist and professor of surgical oncology in the College of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences. Dr. Earhart was awarded the Ross M. Wilkins MD Limb Preservation Chair in Musculoskeletal Biology and Oncology in 2015. Dr. Earhart, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Tell us about CSU's Columbine Health Systems Center for Healthy Aging.
Yes, happy to do that. It's a mouthful, isn't it?
It really is.
So we have long since had a very strong history of aging research on campus at Colorado State University. But like most universities, you know, we do a really good job of diving deep into our disciplines of research, but sometimes we fail to look across disciplines. And frequently I've found that it's some of the greatest challenges in the world, aging being one. The greatest questions and even the best answers come at the intersections between disciplines. So the Columbine Health Systems Center for Healthy Aging is an interdisciplinary research center that builds bridges across different disciplines within aging research to solve larger problems.
Can you give us an example?
Well, best example right now is COVID-19, right? The biggest challenge I think globally we've ever faced in our lifetimes and for decades. And, you know, we have not had an infectious disease focus per se in aging, but it turns out that COVID-19 is one of those things that affects people of advanced age more severely than others. And because of that, we have reached across disciplines and are working now with our Infectious Disease Research Center and other very talented scientists within the CSU community to solve some of the problems surrounding the specific issues of vulnerable people, such as people in later life.
Doctor, can you talk about the project you're working on now to test people working, I believe it's a senior center, and you're finding a lot of results where people are asymptomatic, but they're still shedding virus all over the place. Can you talk about that?
You bet. So early on in this crisis, as the pandemic began to unfold, you know, a lot of my research and even background in medicine, I was concerned about the fact that with many viruses, there are periods of asymptomatic shedding. So you don't have any symptoms, and yet you can still infect others. And the policies were coming out stating that we needed to screen people coming to work, for example, healthcare workers or other workers in skilled nursing facilities or long-term care facilities. And they were using fever and any history of cough. And then they would send people home. Of course, you couldn't come to work if you had a fever or a cough. But I was very concerned that they were missing a lot of folks then that might actually be positive for the virus and could potentially unwittingly spread it to their very vulnerable residents that they're trying so hard to care for and keep safe. And so we reached out to the governor and said, hey, we would think that this is a worthwhile cause to fund some work looking at how many of these workers are actually positive for the virus but have no idea that they're positive. And that either means they're pre-symptomatic, like they will become sick at some point, or they remain asymptomatic throughout the course of actually their COVID-19 process. And the governor has funded that now. It's scaling up to reach a number of different facilities all across the state. But in the initial, say, 7 weeks or so of this pandemic, my colleague Greg Ebel, who's a virologist, and I funded this out of our own, essentially our own startup money and just like slush funds that we had to try to see if we could get this started and off the ground. And what we found was that about across the board in five different facilities, there were about 12% or so of people who were coming to work, had no idea that they were positive and they felt fine, but yet they still had virus enough to, you know, be infectious. Now, those workers are, of course, using PPE and other, you know, ways to help protect the residents. But still, you know, the fact that they had the virus and didn't know it was a risk factor. And so what we did is when we found those folks, We said, we tapped him on the shoulder, or they did, and said, hey, go home for 2 weeks. We're going to continue to test you. And when you're negative, you can come back. And what we've shown over the 8 week period that we've been doing this work is that we can actually decrease the number of new positives in these different facilities by actually finding those workers that are positive but had no idea, asking them to self-isolate, continuing to test them, and then when they're negative, then they know they're safe to come back to work.
Do you have any data, anecdotal or otherwise, about how long it took before those workers who were testing positive tested negative?
You know, it's been variable. The average time is about 2 weeks. But there have been people that are positive for longer than that. And there have been people that were negative, then positive, then negative, then positive again. And so we believe in those people that are those kind of right on the tail end, kind of people that are fluctuating between negative and positive. They're probably on the tail end of their infection. They probably started being infected before we actually started the study. So we're starting to work all of that out, but the average is about 2 weeks. And we're seeing that as we look at these groups of, you know, workers over a period of time, we really get a much better idea of the dynamic of how the virus is behaving in those systems of workers than if you just do like a snapshot, which is a one-time test. And so it seems that this surveillance or this longitudinal study design is very, very helpful to understand in a complex workplace who is positive and how to maybe, you know, redeploy workers in a way that's safe for everyone, ask people to self-isolate so that you're keeping a good, you know, a very good running tab, I guess, of what's happening with the virus transmission in those systems.
You must have been surprised at how many asymptomatic people tested positive. Were you surprised at how many asymptomatic people stayed asymptomatic, or did a lot of those folks end up with some symptoms?
Yeah, great question. Only about 20% ever went on to have symptoms. Now, those are the classic symptoms, like the cough and the fever, et cetera. It might be that they had very mild symptoms but didn't really recognize those or report those as COVID-related. But to the best we can tell anyway, only about 20% ever actually became symptomatic.
And is there any indication that if you're asymptomatic, you're less contagious than if you're fully symptomatic?
Nope, there is. In fact, we were initially concerned that when we started doing asymptomatic screening, you know, would we actually have to kind of squint to see the virus? Would it be difficult for us to find it? It turns out that that's not the case, that these folks that are asymptomatic but positive have plenty of virus. And then we even did some verification tests where we took the virus that we were swabbing, you know, through the nasopharyngeal swabs, and actually saw whether that amount of virus could infect cells. And indeed it does. So they are really infectious and they do have a high amount of virus. Now, that's not 100% of people. There are people that have lower amounts, but it's definitely not associated with, you know, lack of symptom is not associated with lack of infectious amounts of virus.
We're talking to Dr. Nicole Earhart. She is Colorado State University's director of the Columbine Health Systems Center for Healthy Aging. Nicole, how quickly have other long-term care facilities been able to implement similar kinds of testing? Because you said the study started with 5 centers in Colorado, but I'm guessing that there are hundreds of long-term care facilities here in the state.
Yep. And so Governor Paulus just recently signed an interagency agreement with Colorado State University, and we are now scaling that up to an additional 25 long-term care facilities. And so we are right in the process of, you know, developing the scale-up workforce that it's going to take. So we're going to be testing about 45,000 people. And so it's a relatively huge undertaking, something, you know, that we are still shaking our heads going, wow, we never thought this would happen. But it's something that we know we can contribute to help people, especially people in long-term care facilities, safer. And so we're really proud to be part of that effort and really grateful for the support from the state.
Deaths in Colorado have really been made up. I think it's about half of our deaths from COVID-19 have been from people who are in long-term care facilities. So this kind of testing of workers really seems to be targeted at the most vulnerable populations.
Yes. And when we do the scale up, and again, we're about ready to begin that larger testing program, and we will be testing both workers and residents. So again, the idea there is to get an idea of the dynamics within those facilities so that we can make informed choices and best practice decisions on how to care for people. Because, you know, being in isolation, for example, for an older person can be just as deadly in some ways as a virus itself. So of course we have to protect them, but we also want to know how to help them get to, you know, get the things that they need, like social interactions with their families and others, by trying to figure out what's the dynamic of the virus transmission within those facilities. How can we best manage it? How can we protect everyone? And also, how do we get people back to work? How do we get people out of isolation? How do we get families back together in a way that's safe? So that's really the ultimate goal.
Dr. Earhart, what are some of the lessons that the general public can take away from what you've learned about asymptomatic cases and whatnot?
Yeah, so, you know, the one big thing is that screening for symptoms is not going to catch everyone, right? And so, you know, even as a family member, say, wanting to visit one of your loved ones that's in one of these facilities, just knowing that you don't have symptoms and none of the family has symptoms and that you haven't been exposed is not enough. You still have to take extreme precautions to keep that person safe. And, you know, those people are also, in a congregate living situation with other people. They themselves could also be asymptomatic, right? And so understanding what's happening with the people within those facilities, and then as we begin to develop plans that are risk-adjusted plans to help people get visitors back in these centers and things, they're going to have to be done in a very, very careful way that, again, takes into account the fact that you yourself as a family member could bring something in. And so therefore, you've got to use your protection. You've got to wash your hands. There's got to be ways in which we can get people back together again and live with this virus in a way that's safe. So I think the biggest lesson learned is you can't know if you're, you don't know if you're infectious or not, really, just by your symptoms. And so certainly as more widespread testing becomes available where people that don't have symptoms can easily get tested, and that is coming online, as you know, or point of care testing where you can, you know, walk into a facility and, you know, spit into a tube and have a test that's run right there, which is not available yet. But those are the kinds of things that I think will come online. And certainly with these kinds of great challenges, great innovation occurs. And we've already seen that even in the last 6 weeks, the number of, you know, point of care types of tests and different things that are available. So once again, it's an evolving situation, but I think there's a lot of reason for hope here. And I think that with this knowledge is power kind of approach, where we know what we're dealing with within these facilities, we're going to be coming out of this sooner than if we just choose not to look. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Has to be very risk averse.
Has the testing increased on the residents as well in the places you're focused on? Is widespread testing available to all the people living in the community and working in there as well?
That's the plan for the scale-up program. When we started our pilot, we just did asymptomatic workers because we felt like we needed to start somewhere. And this was, no one was kind of, it didn't seem like that concern was at the front of everyone's mind. And yet those of us who are in the world of medicine were very concerned about it. So that's why we started there. And I think doing those initial studies that helped everyone understand asymptomatic workers are a risk, right? We've got to be able to monitor this. So that actually kind of got us a lot more street credibility, I think, at the state level. And then now that we've got the increased scale-up funding, we are planning to do residents and workers within each of those facilities because they're equally as big a part of the picture.
Nicole, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this morning and discuss these really fascinating results that you guys have found. Is there anything else you'd like to share with listeners?
I think maybe the message of hope is the big thing that everyone needs to hear right now. And I can say as a scientist and someone who's on the front lines of knowing what's, you know, being developed and how people are coming together across all scientific disciplines to work on this and to focus on this is one of the greatest, maybe, interdisciplinary projects that the world has ever seen. And I think that is a reason for great hope because, as I mentioned, great innovation is coming, understanding is coming. It does take patience. I mean, we know 1,000 times more than we knew 6 weeks ago now about COVID. And in 6 weeks, we're going to know 1,000 times or maybe even 10,000 times more than what we know now. So don't give up hope. And, you know, I think just keep an eye on the scientific literature, And, you know, I think there's some good things that are coming in the horizon here.
Dr. Nicole Earhart is Colorado State University's Director of the Columbine Health Systems Center for Healthy Aging. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.